Corin's voice came back strong.
The X-Wing doesn't need to get a targeting lock. He just needs to get in close. The Y-Wings will be targeting the X-Wing's homing beacon. Time it right, put the Lancer between the missiles and the X-Wing, and you can scratch one Lancer.
That just might work. Wedge pulled back on the X-Wing's stick and started up towards space and the waiting Imperial ships. I'll make the run.
Negative, Antilles!
General.
Rogue Leader, this is 9, outbound. Release Warden Squadron to me.
Psalm's fury sizzled over the comm.
Under no circumstances! Stop now, Rogue 9! Release the squadron to me. I'm outbound, and I'm going to play tag with that Lancer. This is treason, 9!
Psalm's voice cracked with anger.
I'll have you shot! As long as it's Warden Squadron that's doing it, I don't mind a bit. 9 out. Antilles, do something!
He's got the altitude, General. And the attitude. Release the squadron to him.
Wedge let a deep breath out. Then form Champion up on me, just in case his run doesn't do the trick.
Corin keyed his comm. Okay, Wardens, this is how we become heroes. Link your torpedoes so they'll be shooting 2. You'll shoot them on my mark. Timing is critical here. Go too early and you won't hit anything. Go too late and I'm... Look, just don't go too late. 10, I need you to match their speed. And don't let them get any closer than 8.5 clicks from me. And not much farther either. My homing beacon will be on 312.43. Use that as the frequency for the target lock on the torpedoes.
Got it, 9.
Control, 9 here. Be prepared to scatter the Wardens with evasive maneuver plots in case the Lancer gets aggressive once the torpedoes are away.
On it, 9. Good luck.
Corin's hand strayed to the medallion he wore. Thanks, Control. 9 out. Okay, Whistler. We have our work cut out for us.
The pilot hit switches that pumped the full output of the fusion engine into propulsion. Then all shield power to the forward shields.
I'm going to be trying to weave in at that monster. I want you to route my stick commands through a randomizer that adds or subtracts portions of 5 degrees in all dimensions from my commands. Don't let the Lancer get out of a 20-degree cone of my nose. But in that cone, I want to be jumping around. Got it?
The droid replied with a sharp affirmative whistle.
And at the Lancer, I want to invert and pull a tight loop, scraping right over the top of its hull and down the other side. We should be going away at 90 degrees to our current line and back toward Bladet's atmosphere.
Corin sighed.
If we make it that far.
Whistler squawked reprovingly.
Sorry to get you into this.
Corin punched the console button that enabled the droid's ejection system.
Maybe your next pilot won't be so stupid.
The green light above the button went out. Corin hit the button again.
And maybe your next ship won't have shorts.
The light died again. The pilot turned and looked back at the droid.
You got a death wish?
Whistler brayed derisively at him.
I am not looking at taking all the glory for myself.
Corin swallowed past the lump in his throat.
Thanks for hanging in. My father died alone. Doing that doesn't recommend itself.
The droid gave him a scolding whoop.
Okay. You do your part, and I'll make sure we don't die.
Corin looked at his scanner. Sensors put him 18 clicks out from the Lancer.
Whistler, check my math. At full power, I'll do 6 clicks in the time it takes the missiles to catch me. That means they have to shoot when I hit the 6-click mark. They have to be inside 15 clicks from the Lancer. Looks like we're all lined up and ready to go.
The droid chirped triumphantly, and a countdown clock started in the upper corner of the sensor display.
9 to Wardens. 44.0 seconds to launch. Whistler, cut in the randomizer when I hit 2.5 clicks from the target.
The Lancer's weaponry, because it was taken from TIE bombers, suffered the same range limitations as the fighters.
Also, map how the towers are working, and send that data back to Control and Rogue Leader. If the Lancer has any weak points, any guns that aren't shooting well, they need to know.
The timer counted down to 10 seconds. Corrin rubbed his medallion one more time, then settled his right hand on the stick and smiled.
Here goes, Rogue Nine, following the unit's tradition of accepting suicide missions with a smile. Wardens, on my mark. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, mark! Launch torpedoes!
The comm came alive with fire reports. Corrin couldn't make sense of the babble, but as the clash of voices died, he did hear,
Warden 3, torpedoes away!
He glanced at the timer, which had started scrolling off seconds until impact. 2 seconds late. Probably not a problem.
Whistler, you want to kill the volume on the missile lock warning siren? I am aware they're incoming.
The background noise in the cockpit died. He watched the seconds slowly count down. It seemed to take forever for him to pass from the launch point to halfway in on the Lancer. As his ship streaked in, he could see strings of green laser bolts begin to stretch out toward him. They began to curve and curl as the gunners tried to track his ship. The closing speed made all of their initial shots go long. 12 1/4 seconds from impact, Whistler brought the randomizing program into play, and Corrin felt the stick begin to twitch. A tiny spark of fear ran through him as he imagined he had lost control of the ship. In its wake, he found a calm that felt all too familiar from the last night on Talassia.
Well, I didn't die then. Maybe, just maybe.
Easing the stick back and to the left, he tossed the X-Wing into the weed. Seemingly solid wave of green laser energy lashed out from the Lancer. Yet his snub fighter sliced through the troughs and curled around the crests, flirting with their deadly caresses. Light flashed against his shields, partially blinding him, but those glancing hits neither slowed nor deflected him. There was no missing his target. The Lancer-class frigate, Whistler identified it as the Ravager, swelled into a hard-edged, spiky rectangle with an upbent prow and a bulbous engine assembly. Green backlight from the quad splashed color over the ship's imperial white exterior. Corrin nudged the X-Wing in line, more or less, with the ship's middle deck. Then the X-Wing whirled out of his control. In compliance with the instructions he had given Whistler before, the droid rolled the fighter hard to starboard. The stick bashed Corrin's right hand against the side of the cockpit, but before the pain could begin to register, the stick tore itself free of his grasp and smacked him solidly in the chest. With the stick pinning him back in his command chair, Corrin could only look up and watch the Ravager's hull blur as it flashed past. The torpedoes had been within half a second of catching the X-Wing when it snapped up and around the Ravager. While fully capable of making the same maneuver the fighter had, because of their greater speed, the torpedoes needed more space in which to make it. Even as they started to correct their courses to follow Corrin, they slammed into the Lancer and detonated. The first half dozen explosions produced more energy than the shields could absorb. The shields went down, leaving the frigate open to the rest of the torpedo swarm. Blast shields buckled and transparasteel viewports evaporated as the torpedoes detonated. Titanium hull plates went molten, flowing into globules of metal that would harden as perfect spheres in the frozen darkness of space. Decks ruptured, and the growing fireball at the center of the ship consumed atmosphere, equipment, and personnel with a rapacious appetite. All but two of the torpedoes fed into the roiling plasma storm raging in the heart of the Ravager. In bisecting the ship, the torpedoes cut all power and control links between the bridge in the prow and the engines at the stern. Automatic safeguards immediately kicked in, and the engines shut down. All laser fire from the Ravager died, and the stricken ship keeled over. It began to lose a tug of war with the planet below, and slowly tumbled down into Rachuk's gravity well.
Corrin, in an X-Wing sprinting away from the Imperial frigate, could see none of the damage the torpedoes did to the Ravager. He stared down at his sensor monitor and smiled as the sensors reported, line by line, the deaths of 22 torpedoes that were following him. 22? But there should have been 24. He pried the stick off his chest. Whistler, where are those last two missiles? The sensor array shifted. The torpedoes had shot under the Lancer, reacquiring his beacon when he cleared the frigate's far side. Almost here! I have to brake hard! The stick twitched and jerked of its own accord. Horror trickled electricity through Corrin's guts. Whistler, cut it out! The stick still bucked and fought against his grip. Corrin realized, in one painfully crystal-clear moment, that in having used the indefinite pronoun it in his last command, he had made a mistake equal in magnitude to still having all shield energy in his forward arc. He started to rectify both of those errors, but the proximity indicator reporting the location of Warden 3's torpedoes told him his time had run out.
22. Kirtan Lor's shuttle came out of hyperspace a second before the spread of proton torpedoes hit the Ravager. Hanging nearly 10 kilometers above the distant Lancer, all Kirtan saw was a cone of green laser light stabbing off into space, then a brilliant light dawning at the base of the cone, illuminating the frigate in which it burned. Subsidiary blasts surrounded the ship with fire, then it slowly started to drift away as escape pods shot in all directions away from it.
What in Sith happened there?
The shuttle's pilot shook his head.
I don't know, but I'm reading a Corellian blockade runner out there and a number of Alliance fighters. I'm taking us into the Expeditious now.
The fear in the man's voice almost overwhelmed Kirtan's sense of mission.
While you're running, Lieutenant,
get me as much comm chatter captured as you can.
I want all of it.
Do you have any survey probes?
Launch one.
Sensors are telling us all we need to know about the dead frigate, sir.
Not it, you moron! Launch it at the runner and the fighters!
Only because he couldn't fly the shuttle did Kirtan refrain from throttling the pilot.
If you had lasers for brains, you couldn't melt ice with them!
Probe away!
The pilot glanced back at him.
Anything else? Or can I land us on the Expeditious and get us out of here?
Are the fighters a serious threat to us?
Probably not. They're all too far away. But I don't want to chance it.
Very well. Do your docking maneuver. But keep data flow constant from that probe.
As you command, my lord.
Kirtan ignored the mocking tones in the man's voice and sat back to think. The tiny rocket probe would provide little solid data. It was designed to be used to sink into a planet's atmosphere and provide a shuttle with wind and atmospheric data that would affect flight and landing. It also had basic communication scanning capabilities and some visual sensors that might provide him data about the blockade runner and the fighters. All of that would only confirm what he knew inside already. The fighters, or part of them at least, were from Rogue Squadron. Their need to strike back after the raid on their base was obvious, as was the Rebellion's need to punish Admiral Devlia for daring to strike at them. Kirtan pressed his hands together, fingertip to fingertip.
Lieutenant, is there any signal from Grand Isle?
Automatic warning beacons, and faint homing locators from tie wreckage.
Good. Then Devlia got what he deserved.
Kirtan had assumed Rogue Squadron and the Rebellion would exact retribution for the raid even before he had deduced its location. This was why he had wanted a mechanical probe to be followed by a full-scale assault. Destroying Rogue Squadron would have hampered Rebel operations in the Rachuk sector,
and clearly would have prevented the loss of the Ravager, as well as Grand Isle. If it had been done my way, Admiral Devlia would have been a hero instead of just dead. Kirtan closed his eyes and summoned up all the information he had about troop strengths and locations in the sphere of space that surrounded Coruscant. Corellia and Kuat both were located in the most thickly populated portion of the galaxy, and were heavily defended because of their shipyards. Their sectors had limited rebel activity, largely because of the Imperial presence. The rebels, while arrogant enough to think they could destroy the Empire, were not stupid. Hitting the Empire where it was strong was not a good way to win the war. Sectors like Rachuk were weak links in the perimeter, but were not the keys to winning the Galactic Civil War. Industrialized warfare called for the destruction of a force's ability to wage war. Conquering primitive worlds that produced very little of what contributed to the war effort was not a way to do that. The ease of delivering forces to strike at Rachuk from other Imperial garrisons meant it would be difficult to hold. Therefore, he assumed, the rebels would not try to hold it. By leaving it in our hands, we have to devote forces to holding it, further diluting our strength. The ideal choice for a rebel strike would be in a sector of space where travel was limited because of black holes, clouds of ionized gases, and other gravitic anomalies that made hyperspace travel unpredictable and dangerous. Also be outside the most solidly inhabited areas of the galaxy to minimize the amount of support the Empire could devote to it. But it wouldn't be so far outside that same area that the Alliance, which also drew a lot of support from the Empire's populous worlds, could not supply and support it. From his encyclopedic memory, Kirtan dredged up the names of a dozen candidate sectors, and he knew there had to be four times that number that he did not know about. He purposely refrained from allowing himself to select a target. Assuming the veracity of a working hypothesis is the sort of mistake that caused Gil Bastra's death. I cannot afford another such mistake. The pilot flipped a switch on the shuttle's command console, and the wings retracted. The Lambda-class shuttle settled down on the dorsal hull of the cruiser. Retraction clamps clicked into place. A tremor shook the shuttle as the docking tunnel bumped the ship from below and formed an airtight seal around the shuttle's exit ramp. Kirtan freed himself from his restraining straps.
Lieutenant, download all the feeds and probe data onto separate data cards. Then wipe this ship's memory.
Yes, sir.
Kirtan left the cockpit and descended the ramp into the Expeditious. Captain Rojan greeted him with a curious light in his eyes.
Welcome back aboard, Agent Law. Your timing was rather precise.
We're not waiting long.
I don't imagine the Ravager's crew has the same perspective on our timing you do.
The shorter man shook his head, then adjusted his gray cap.
Perhaps not. We might ask them about that if we are allowed to recover escape pods.
Allowed to recover them?
Most are going toward Vladette, but some are heading out into space. They probably assume the rebels will take the world.
Rojan shrugged his shoulders.
I would recover them, but I have strict orders to head out to the Pyrea system the moment I have you aboard.
The Pyrea system was one of the candidate systems Kirtan had pinpointed. Borlaeus was the name of the inhabited world in that system. The Empire maintained a small base there, overseen by General Evir Derricote. It was unremarkable, except that it was on his list of target systems for the rebels.
Kirtan raised an eyebrow. The orders came from Imperial Center, from Director Izard.
Rojan nodded.
There are sealed orders awaiting you in your cabin.
Kirtan thought for a second, then nodded.
Take us out of this system. If we pick up some escape pods before we jump, I have no problem with that. You will have to plot an evasive course to our destination. If the pods can concentrate themselves in our exit vector, they are all yours.
The Navy captain smiled.
Thank you, sir.
No thanks are needed, Captain. We are all in this together.
Kirtan refrained from smiling, despite the feeling of power growing in his chest.
I trade time for loyalty. Something I did not know to do on Corellia. With every lesson I learn, I become more deadly to the Rebellion.
Finally, he did smile.
And the more deadly I am to the Rebellion, the more useful I become within the Empire. That usefulness translates into power. And in the Empire, power is the very stuff of life.
Corin pushed himself back on his bunk, leaning against the bulkhead and drawing his knees up.
What brings you guys here?
Rosati, sitting down at his feet, frowned.
We just heard you were confined to quarters and could be facing a court-martial. How are you doing?
The Corellian shrugged. I'm fine.
Irisi Delaret brushed black bangs away from her face as she sat on Oral's bed.
Aren't you angry to be treated like this after what you did?
He hesitated before answering her. Upon their return to the reprieve, Wedge had pulled him aside and said General Salm intended to bring him up on charges of insubordination, disobeying direct orders, and pirating a squadron of bombers. Wedge had said he thought he could get the charges quashed in light of how things went at Vladette. But until then, he wanted Corin to consider himself confined to quarters. In disciplining him in private, he gave Corin the chance to keep the matter private until it was adjudicated.
I guess I'm not angry.
Corin was surprised to hear himself saying that, but he didn't feel the throat-constricting rage that had characterized how he felt after his father's murderer was turned loose without so much as an arraignment.
General Salm has no choice but to prefer charges. What I did was pretty stupid and very risky, and I put one of his squadrons in jeopardy.
The Twi'lek let one of his brain tails drape itself over Rosati's shoulder and lightly stroked her throat.
If the General didn't report Corin's actions, military discipline would break down. Any pilot with a crack-brained scheme... not to characterize what you did as crack-brained, mind you, could disobey orders and most likely get himself killed.
Irisi leaned forward with her elbows on her knees. Corin noticed that her flight suit was unzipped far enough to give him a fair view of her cleavage.
But Corin didn't get himself killed.
Corin smiled.
But it was a near thing. One of the pig drivers shot his torp slate. They lost my signal, then picked it up again when I was heading away from the Ravager. When I noticed they were coming after me, I realized that Whistler hadn't killed the jiggle program he had running to randomize my flight as I headed into the Lancer's light. I wanted to brake hard, but he had me locked in on a 20-degree cone, so all I could do was fly straight.
Then how did you...
Even a puzzled frown couldn't detract too much from Arisi's beauty.
I told Whistler to cut it out. I was thinking the jiggle code when I said it. Whistler, being a bit more direct in his problem-solving, just cut the homing beacon the torps were using to track me. They lost their target, couldn't reacquire it, and exploded. The second or so it took them to do all that took me outside their blast radius.
Rosati smiled and gently patted Nawara's brain tail.
Well, we're happy your R2 unit takes such good care of you. And I, for one, want to thank you for what you did out there. The Lancer would have killed a lot of us if we had tried to take it out the normal way.
The Twi'lek nodded.
The traditional rogue squadron way, leaving bits and pieces of X-wings scattered around.
The blue-eyed woman from Thyfera frowned at Nawara.
We have a new tradition now, and Corin's action is a glorious part of it. We've had 3 missions, and we've lost none of our pilots. And this, when Commander Antilles told us our first 5 missions would kill a bunch of us off.
Irisi, we have lost a pilot.
Corrin scratched at his chest where he'd been shot.
We almost lost 3 more on Talassia. Don't start thinking we're invulnerable. The missions we've had so far have been relatively simple.
I know that, Corrin. I don't think of us as leading charmed lives.
Her eyes tightened slightly, but Corrin sensed no ire in the changed expression.
In reading about the unit's history, it has always flown well on simple missions. Even so, our kill rates and repair rates are better than ever before. I don't doubt we'll have missions that will push us to the limit. But if statistics have any truth in them, we're not burning up all our luck on our missions.
Speak for yourself.
Corrin winked at her.
At the bank of luck, I've hit my credit limit.
Nuwara jerked a thumb at the cabin's closed doorway.
Well, there's a wing of bomber jocks willing to make payments on your account. Right now, they're settling for buying the rogues a couple of rounds down at the recreation center.
They're toasting Broar for picking up 2 eyeballs over Grand Isle.
Rosati rolled her eyes.
They'd rather be buying drinks for you. He's the hot pilot from the run. 2 is more than I got.
Irisi frowned at him.
But you got the frigate.
Corrin shook his head.
No, I didn't.
What?
The Twi'lek explained.
If Corrin had so much as shot 1 laser burst at the frigate, then he would have gotten a piece of the kill. But fractions below a half are not recognized as being worthy of being recorded. Warden Squadron got the frigate. Corrin is able to verify it, but he gets nothing for it.
That's not fair!
Irisi looked from Nuwara to Corrin and back again.
He should get credit for the kill.
Irisi,
Rosati began.
If you're shooting at some squint and he jukes and your shots eliminate an eyeball, would you want the squint to get credit for your kill?
I see your point, but I do not think it is fair.
I'll survive it.
Corrin shrugged.
What's not fair is the 3 of you spending time here with me when you should be downstairs having fun and billing it to Defender Wing. Go on. Have a good time.
Rosati stood and slipped an arm around Nuwara's waist.
We'll be going, then. We'll let the others know you're doing fine.
Thanks.
Rosati looked at Irisi.
Coming?
In a minute.
All right.
The 2 of them left, and the hatch slid shut. Then Irisi crossed the narrow room and took Rosati's place at the foot of the bed. All of a sudden, it seemed to Corrin that the cabin, which was none too big to begin with, had become much more close and tiny. He would have used the word intimate to describe it, but the way Irisi laid a hand on his knee gave him the impression she had that word in mind as well, and for some reason, that made him feel a bit uncomfortable.
Corrin, I just wanted to let you know that I felt... feel... I owe you a debt it will be very hard to repay. When the report of a Lancer being in our exit vector came through, I knew...
Irisi hesitated and pressed her free hand lightly against her throat.
I knew I wasn't going to make it. I'm not the best pilot in this unit, and I was certain I would die fighting against the frigate. And then you did what you did, and I felt as if a great crushing weight had been lifted from me.
She shook her head, bringing dark bangs down to half hide her blue eyes.
I know this is sudden, and... well, I just feel very close to you now.
Leaning forward, she rested both her hands on his kneecaps and laid her chin on top of them.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, probably better than you think.
She blinked her eyes, then smiled.
You feel it too?
I felt it,
Corrin sighed.
A huge hunk of what you're feeling comes from the downside of the emotional spike you hit during the run. I know what that's like. In Corsec, I was partnered with a woman, Ayela Wasiri. She was pretty. Not as pretty as you are, but no Gamorrean either. We raided a Glitterstim dealer's warehouse, and a rather nasty light fight erupted. One guy had me centered at his sights when she took him out. I'd thought I was dead, and she saved me. In the immediate aftermath of that, I thought I was in love with her. Or in lust, at least. Before then, we'd just been friends, like you and I are. Maybe there were some core sparks of something, but nothing we'd noticed or acted on. And that night, well, we both felt it.
What happened?
Corrin scowled. The Imperial liaison officer took the two of us into custody for debriefing. 2 days later, we saw each other again. The heat of the moment had passed, and we laughed about it, but never did anything. That fear, and having been so closely brushed by death, made us want something positive to counteract it.
Is that bad?
No, it's not bad, Arisi. Corrin shifted around so he sat beside her and held both of her hands in his. It's also not genuine. And I must admit, I'm not sure about the wisdom of getting involved with someone inside the unit.
Rissati and Nuara don't seem to have trouble with it.
I know. And I think they're good for each other. Arisi raised his right hand to her mouth and kissed his palm.
I think you may be right, Corrin. But I need to ask you something. You said you and your partner had sparks at some basic level, and that led to your attraction to her. Do we have those sparks?
Perhaps. I don't know.
Feeling uncomfortably warm, Corrin tugged at the collar of his flight suit.
For the past several years, both before and since leaving Corsec, my emotional life has been a bit unstable.
Is there someone else? Do you still care for your partner?
No. There's no one else. Not Ayela. Not anyone.
Arisi pursed her lips for a moment, then nodded.
I accept what you're saying.
She stood and stretched languorously.
Of course, you don't know what you're missing.
Corrin let out a deep breath, then rose from his bunk.
I wish I didn't. Right now, though, I'm exhausted enough that I'd be no good to either one of us.
She laughed and kissed him lightly on the mouth.
Corrin, I really do appreciate your concerns over my feelings.
Irisi backed away from him toward the opening hatchway.
Have sweet dreams.
She turned in the open hatchway and came face to face with Mirax Tarek. The smuggler's daughter smiled politely.
Excuse me? I didn't realize I was intruding.
Not at all, Miss Tarek.
All the warmth drained from Arisi's voice.
I was just leaving so Lieutenant Horn could get some rest. He's confined to quarters, and I don't believe that order allows civilian visitors.
Mirax tapped the data pad riding in a sheath on her left forearm.
I have permission to visit from his commanding officer. We can check with M. Trey if you wish.
Irisi looked back at Corrin, and he would have preferred being under the Ravager's guns again to her stare.
It's okay, Arisi. I'm sure Miss Tarek won't be staying long. Thanks for the talk.
You're most welcome, Lieutenant.
Arisi turned and nodded curtly to Mirax.
Miss Tarek.
Later.
Mirax watched Arisi walk away, then added under her breath,
much later.
Turning back around, she caught Corrin staring after Arisi.
Flyboys. All you think about is sex.
What?
She shoved the plastic case she was carrying into his stomach, none too gently, then walked past him into the cabin.
The smallest smuggling hold on the skate is bigger than this.
The Reprieve wasn't built for pleasure cruising or smuggling. I'm looking forward to grounding at a new base.
Corin stepped back out of the hatchway and let it close. Hefting the box, he asked,
"What's this?"
Mirax flopped down on Oral's bed.
"Wedge said you might be down, but then he didn't realize the Bacta Queen would be here. I figured you might like some stuff from home, so I got this little package together."
She shrugged.
"I intended it as something of a peace offering, I guess."
Corin sat on the edge of his bed and undid the case's two latches. He opened the box and smiled. In it, he saw a half dozen data card issues of magazines from Corellia, as well as two tins of spicy smoked Nerf and a bottle of Wyron's Reserve whiskey.
"Wow, this is more stuff from Corellia than I've seen in the past 2 years."
Mirax rolled up on her right side and rested her head on her right hand.
"Below the whiskey is a rye skate. I had to substitute some ingredients, but I think it turned out pretty good."
Corin pulled the whiskey bottle out of the case and set it down beside him. Beneath it, wrapped in clear plastic, sat the dark brown sweet cake that was traditionally reserved for birthdays, anniversaries, or other celebrations of momentous occasions.
"Last time I had rye skate was after my father died. After the funeral.
Where'd you find the Whaloo nuts to put into it?"
"Around."
"Around?"
"Yeah, around. There's a thriving black market in Corellian goods out there. A lot of us are out here, and with the diktat in place, the imps still control our space. This means we have a big demand with a restricted supply. So it pays to move the merchandise."
She scowled at the hatch.
"That blasted protocol droid of yours has... had... 2 cases of Corellian whiskey, and has been doling it out to me in 1 or 2 bottle lots. I could have gotten an old customs ship to replace the one that got left in that lake in the Hensara system for the whole case, but he's holding back on me. Getting 2 bottles out of him cost me a hyperdrive horizontal booster and a case of Lalosh mixes that came from Alderaan before it died."
Corin raised an eyebrow.
"M. Trey had the whiskey?" "I got 2 bottles from him. One's beside you, and one's in the rye skate."
She sat up, and their knees almost touched.
"You going to arrest the droid for smuggling?"
"No. Just let him off with a warning, I guess."
The fighter pilot smiled.
"Do you want some of the rye skate? You made it, so you should have some of it."
She hesitated, then nodded her head.
"A small piece. But only if we can think of a reason to celebrate."
"How about being alive?"
"Good enough for me."
Corin punctured the plastic wrap with his thumb and broke a corner of the moist, flat cake. He split it in 2 and handed her the larger of the pieces. In keeping with the tradition, he said,
"We share this rye skate in the same way we share our celebration of life."
"To the celebration of life."
They each bit into the cake, and Corin clumsily caught crumbs in his left hand.
The cake itself was delicious. The sweetness softened the woody bite of the whiskey, and the Whaloo nuts just melted in his mouth. He swallowed and smiled.
"This is wonderful. Even if it was made from smuggled ingredients?"
"Even more reason to eat all the evidence."
He shook his head.
"As a peace offering, I can't think of anything better."
"Good."
Mirax stood and ruffled his brown hair with her hand.
"When this alliance finally gets around to going after Coruscant, I'll make another rice skate, and you can carry it to whoever thinks they're in charge. Make the war shorter."
"This rice skate might have been able to turn Darth Vader into a Jedi again." "But I'm not sure it would work on old Iceheart."
He set the case on the bed. "Sure you don't want more?"
"Thanks, but I need to go back to the skates.
She looked at her datapad.
I have about 6 hours until I pull a run Corward.
Are we going to fly cover for you?
Nope. I'm using my wits and guts to get me through.
Corin frowned. No slight intended, but isn't that dangerous? Mirax shook her head.
I've been ambushed once, and you rogues have been ambushed twice. Right now, I suspect traveling without you might be a bit safer than traveling with you. But this is a simple run, anyway.
She kissed him on the cheek as the hatch opened.
Thanks for your concern. See you when I get back.
The hatch eclipsed her as it closed. It struck him that while he had been relieved when Arisi left, he wished Mirax had stayed. He knew he didn't lust after her, though she didn't surrender much, if anything at all, to Arisi in the way of looks. With her, because of their common world of origin, he had a connection that he and Arisi would never share. Even the fact that their fathers had been enemies somehow strengthened the bond between them. Ugh, he shook himself.
Snap out of it, Horn. You're fixing on her the way Arisi fixed on you. Booster Tarek's daughter and Hal Horn's son might be able to be friendly enemies, maybe even friends, but nothing more than that. Remember, first, last, and always, she's a smuggler. There'll come a point when you're not cost-effective, and she'll cut her losses.
He heard his words and knew there was a lot of truth in them. He also heard a lot of his father in them, and that gave him pause. He popped the other half of his piece of rice gate into his mouth.
There are better things to do with my mouth than give voice to speculations that dishonor her gift. We can be friends, and will be friends. Out here, with the Empire cutting us off from our home, what we have in common is more important than any differences that might drive us apart.
24. Wedge's feelings about the briefing on Home One had started bad and quickly went to worse. It hadn't helped that he had no time to pull Admiral Akbar and General Salm aside to work out some sort of compromise on Corin's case.
Leaving him hanging is more of a disservice than disciplining him.
Given the Admiral's apparent distraction with the briefing, Wedge assumed he would get no chance to make a case in support of Corin. Though he was a commander, he was the most junior officer in attendance at the meeting. He recognized several people besides Admiral Akbar and General Salm, but by no means knew who all those in attendance were. He noticed a knot of 4 Bothans, a general, 2 colonels, and 1 commander, up toward the front of the room, but could not name any of them. Clearly, though, they were in charge of the briefing, a point made abundantly clear when the junior officers moved through the room, downloading information from their datapads into those of the other officers. The Bothan general took the podium at the front of the room, and the lights above his audience dimmed. The Bothan's white fur became almost dazzling, and his golden eyes appeared to be made of liquid metal. Wearing an Alliance Army uniform, and clutching a telescoping silver pointer in both hands at the small of his back, he began speaking in a soft voice that did not lack for intensity.
I am General Larin Greffet, and I am now going to brief you on the mission that will open the way to Coruscant for our valiant forces. If you will look to your datapads, you will see the basics on the installation we are to hit. You do not need to know where it is right now, but suffice it to say, possession of this base is the key to the Imperial Core.
Wedge did his best to follow the briefing. The world, codenamed Black Moon, was normal and habitable, not unlike Endor, save that it had no native life forms akin to the Ewoks. Initial survey teams, sent out under the Old Republic, had rated the world poor in mineral or otherwise exploitable wealth. A small base had been created there because the system proved useful as a plotting point for runs to the corporate sector and beyond.
but being a crossroads in space was insufficient to spur much growth and commerce. Other than some experimental attempts at development, all of which failed when exotic research no longer earned generous investment tax credits under the Empire, the world was left largely alone.
The Empire did expand the base and provide force shield projectors, but only so the Rebellion would not find it an inviting target for transition into a sanctuary so close to the core.
General Greffey gestured with an open hand.
The base also supports 4 heavy ion cannons and has 2 squadrons of TIE fighters available to it.
Wedge frowned. The defenses struck him as odd. Too much for an out-of-the-way world, but too little for a world that would put them perilously close to Coruscant. Vladette, a sector headquarters, had only had 4 TIEs on the ground, 2 ion cannons, and a set of shields, but not enough power to bring both cannons and shields online at the same time. Wedge didn't get the feeling that Black Moon was some sort of Imperial trap, but he did think that it was tough enough that the imps on the ground might be able to summon help from other worlds nearby and hold on until it arrived. The Bothan general went on and described his proposed mode of attack. It consisted of using the Emancipator, one of the 2 Imperial Star Destroyers that had been captured at Endor and repaired by the Alliance, to batter down the shields. General Salm's Defender Wing would then go in to pound the Imperial facilities and defenses, with Rogue Squadron keeping the TIEs away from the bombers. Once ground resistance had been weakened, troop transports would land Alliance troops and complete the conquest of the world. General Greffey concluded,
I expect to be operational in 2 weeks, with conquest completed within 15 standard days from now.
General Salm looked past Wedge to Admiral Akbar.
This plan is already approved?
Akbar, who had a silver Mon Calamari admiral, Ragab of the Emancipator, on his other side, wore a pained expression on his face.
Yes, General Salm. This plan...
Greffey interrupted him.
Forgive me, Admiral Akbar, but I believe I can answer that question myself.
The Bothan brushed the white fur on his face with his left hand, bringing the fur down to a point at his chin.
Yes, General. The Provisional Council has approved this plan. Would you be objecting to their exercise of wisdom in this matter?
I would never do that, General Greffey. But 2 weeks to prepare for an assault is a very short time.
If your pilots are not up to it, General, there are other Y-Wing squadrons in the fleet.
My people will be ready.
No love lost between those two.
Wedge raised his hand.
If I might, I do have some questions about the operation.
The Bothan opened his hands indulgently.
Please, proceed, Commander.
The deflector shields. Your report shows them vulnerable to bombardment when they are projected far enough to cover non-essential satellite facilities on the ground. What if the Commander just shrinks the diameter of the coverage?
It would not matter. The base has insufficient generating capacity to bring up shields that could withstand our bombardment.
Even if the ion cannons aren't online?
That question brought a moment's hesitation before it was answered.
It would make no difference.
Wedge didn't like the faint confidence in Greffey's voice. The success of the operation was predicated on bringing the shields down. While Wedge didn't want to think General Greffey was being stupid, his reliance on bombardment from space seemed remarkably short-sighted. The imps had chosen to use a ground assault on Hoth to bring the shields down. While bombardment had worked elsewhere in the past, the Hoth solution seemed to work the best, and the presence of ion cannons on the ground meant the ships doing the bombarding could be disrupted, slowing their schedule and raising the specter of help coming in from another system in time to beat back the assault.
He raised his hand again.
Yes, Commander Antilles.
I don't see a breakdown of the ties on Black Moon. Are they eyeballs, squints, dupes, or brights? The Bothan's eyes hardened.
I beg your pardon?
General Salm translated. He wants to know if the fighters are TIE starfighters, interceptors, bombers, or advanced models.
Ah, starfighters mostly, and some others.
Crefay looked around the room for other questions, but no one had any.
To maintain operational security, you will not be given the actual coordinates of your destination until you head out. The simulation packages you are given will fill your needs for detailed information. Isan Izard has stepped up her counterintelligence efforts against us, and without surprise, this mission will suffer.
Without surprise, our people will suffer. Wedge shook his head. I don't like this. The Bothan General's eyes narrowed to golden crescents.
Your likes and dislikes are immaterial, Commander. The Provisional Council has approved this plan, and that is enough.
The Corellian pilot bristled at the rebuke. They may approve of it, but they're not going to be flying this mission, General.
But I will be there, Commander, in the first transport, leading the way down to take Black Moon.
Crefay's nostrils flared, as if he were sniffing out for prey.
I trust you do not doubt Bothan courage.
How could I, when you Bothans take every opportunity to remind all of us that your people capture the location of and information about the second Death Star? No, sir, I do not. I trust you do not doubt the courage of my people. They'll do the mission. But I feel I have an obligation to them to make sure they're going to come home from it. Crefay's lip curled in a sneer.
An obligation you have acquitted so well in the past, Commander Antilles.
Wedge felt a fist tighten around his heart. The faces of all the friends and comrades he had lost throughout the rebellion flashed through his mind. It struck him that each one of them had become posthumous heroes, specifically to allow idiots like Crefay the opportunity to make more rebels into posthumous heroes. The ranks of the dead seemed endless. And inside a heartbeat, the fire Wedge would have turned on Crefay was snuffed by the void that had claimed those he remembered. Akbar stood abruptly.
I believe, General Crefay, that Commander Antilles' concerns are valid. I am surprised your normally painstaking precision in matters of intelligence gathering has been allowed to flag here. If you will, you have told us the hour the tide will be high, but some of us need to know the minute and the second. You have it within your ability to provide us with this information, and you will.
The Bothan glared at the Mon Calamari.
Or
I will see fit to cancel the operation.
But the Council approved it.
Akbar's chin came up.
The Council is a political body that makes political decisions. Unlike a battle where the outcome cannot be reconsidered, political decisions can be recalled and revised endlessly. The Council did decide that a move toward Coruscant needed to be made, and your assault met the parameters they set forth. This does not mean it is the only plan that might do that.
We shall see whether or not this assault goes forward, Admiral. I will distribute simulator packages to all the commands so they may begin training.
The Mon Calamari rested his fists on his hips.
You'll get that data, or I shall destroy all your simulator packages myself.
The Bothan nibbled his lower lip, then nodded to his staff.
Fine. We will get you the information you want, if it is obtainable.
He snapped an order in Bothan to his aides.
and they trailed him from the room. The room emptied rather quickly, leaving Wedge, Salm, and Akbar alone before the illuminated podium. The Mon Calamari lowered his head and peered down into Wedge's face.
You have my sympathies. That was uncalled for.
Wedge still felt like he'd been gut-shot. Why is it that everyone gives the Bothans credit for locating the second Death Star and announcing the Emperor would be on it? Has everyone forgotten the Emperor lured us to Endor to exterminate us? The Bothans were had, yet they wear their deception like a badge of honor. The Mon Calamari nodded slowly.
I have heard others voice your opinion. Mostly those in the Council who have found themselves between a Bothan and some mote of power. Bothans would tell you that the Emperor only conceived of the ambush after the information was stolen, and he became suspicious. We only have the Emperor's word that he fooled the Bothans, and while Luke would never knowingly lie to us, I cannot trust the Emperor in anything.
Wedge sat forward and scrubbed his hands over his face.
I'm sure you are correct, Admiral. I guess I just see that doubt as the shadow lurking behind the unbridled self-confidence the Bothans exhibit. They may have been right about the Death Star, and Crefay may be right about this Black Moon. But if he isn't, lots of people will die.
I share your concern, Commander. You will get your information.
The Corellian nodded. Can you tell me where this Black Moon is, anyway? Akbar hesitated.
Need to know, Commander. And right now, you don't need to know. Before you go, however, you will have all the data you need. The Black Moon system is located in a dense sector, with limited ways in and out. Computing astronav solutions will be simple since there are so few. It makes ambushes easier, too. So the information will be provided when you need it, not when you want it.
Wedge mulled that over, then nodded. I do understand the need for security. I don't like the limitations it imposes, but I understand them. The Mon Calamari's mouth opened in a low chuckle.
We have progress. You'll be moving from the fleet to a world called Noquivzor, and you will stage from there. Several other units will join you there, including Defender Wing.
He clapped his hands together.
So, I imagine you would like to discuss the charges General Salm will bring against Corran Horn.
Wedge sat back up. If we're going to be living together, I think it would be for the best. Do you concur, General? Salm nodded his head.
I agree. But let's save the trouble. Forget the charges.
Excuse me? The balding bomber pilot held his hands up.
If I pushed for a court-martial of Horn for his actions, I'd be a fool. And he'd sit out this assault on Black Moon.
Salm's brown eyes contracted with disgust.
I still think the whole of Rogue Squadron is out of line. But I think things are going to go badly at Black Moon. With Horn and the rest of your pilots there, maybe things won't end up becoming the nightmare that I'm afraid is going to haunt me for the next 2 weeks.
25. The General Derricote managed to refrain from sweating in the steamy atmosphere of Borlaeus did not surprise Kirtan Lore too terribly much. The good general was toad-like enough in his demeanor that the intelligence officer imagined it saved him from melting in the heat and humidity. The bloated, lumpen commander of Imperial forces in the Pyrea system fitted his face with a smile, the abrupt curve of his mouth imitated by the sweep of the two chins jiggling beneath it.
I am pleased to see, Agent Lore, that the past week and a half here on Borlaeus have not appeared to have taken their toll on you.
The man pressed stubby-fingered hands against the dark wood of his desktop.
You found everything you needed for your survey of our defenses?
Kirtan nodded once, then froze and stared down at the Imperial officer for a second without saying anything. He waited, silent and unmoving, until the corners of the man's smile began to quiver.
My security review proved satisfactory. Everything is as it should be here at the installation. Your shield generators are in good repair. Your two squadrons of TIE fighters are being maintained at a high level of readiness. And your training schedule has your pilots logging enough time for twice their number.
Preparation is the price for constant vigilance, Agent Lore.
Derricote's voice remained blasé, but his bovine brown eyes began blinking a bit more rapidly than they should have normally.
We are here to stop the rebellion, so we must be prepared.
Kirtan smiled easily, then leaned forward on the man's desk.
And you are prepared. You have done very well to keep this base secure. And, in fact, your computer security is tighter than anything I have seen outside Imperial Center itself. You also work harder than any other officer I've seen since the Emperor's death.
I am all for the Empire.
You are all for yourself.
Kirtan tapped the datapad built into the man's desk.
I took the liberty of visiting your office when you were not here, and I pulled the secret files from your datapad. You truly are an artist. You duplicate requisitions, append intricate routing tags to them, and send them off to multiple commands, each of which believes you are under its care. You have successfully drawn enough fuel and ordnance to maintain 4 squadrons of TIE fighters. Since only 2 are here, I have to assume the others are at the Alderaan biotic site.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I sincerely doubt that, General. I have read your file. You studied at the Imperial Naval Academy, but concentrated on biological and botanical subjects. While you are fully qualified to oversee a military installation such as this, you are uniquely suited to making the biotic site operational again.
Kirtan smiled.
And profitable.
Derricote's face became ashen, but his smile did not fully erode.
This has not been unanticipated, Agent Lore. I do have resources.
Kirtan raised himself to his full height, then looked back down at Derricote.
This does not surprise me, General. The Alderaan Biotics hydroponic facility was barely more than a tax loss for the parent corporation before the tax laws changed. It was abandoned to the care of maintenance droids and forgotten. Then Alderaan was disciplined, and the market for goods from Alderaan blossomed. My conservative estimate, based on data about 12 months old, is that if you've been operational for 2 years, you should have cleared 2 million credits.
We have been at our fullest production capacity for only 15 months, but our overhead is low, so we have actually made 2.75 million credits. Though much of this is tied up in inventory maintained off-world.
Your overhead is low because the Empire is subsidizing your operation.
The General steepled his fingers.
Think of it as our operation.
I could think of it as my operation, General.
Kirtan folded his arms across his chest.
I do not think I could hold it for long, however. In going back over your security system, I noticed evidence of what could have been Alliance tampering with Holonet messages.
Derricote's eyes grew hard, and he sat up straighter at his desk.
Parsons. They make runs at all HoloNet communications. I feed them data, and it keeps them happy.
The edge in the man's voice surprised Kirtan, as did the physical transformation. Just by sitting up and raising his chin, Derricote had shifted from being a noodle-spined, sycophantic failure to the sort of man who could engineer the deception that made his covert agricultural enterprise possible.
He showed me what I wanted to see, so I would underestimate him.
Derricote touched the screen on his datapad.
Frequency of hits and length of contact is up. Should I correlate that to your visit, Agent Lore? Or shall I just assume the Alliance and Empire taking an interest in my little home is a coincidence?
Kirtan's eyes narrowed.
The Pyrea system is one of a number that fits a profile for being a conduit into the core for the Alliance.
It fits because they don't know about my defenses.
Two more squadrons of TIE fighters will mean little to them.
Ah, so there are some things you don't know about Borlaeus. Imagine that.
Derricote smiled.
I tell you what, son. You leave the defenses here to me. You're an intelligence officer, not a military genius.
Kirtan pointed to the general's private datapad.
I saw nothing in there to indicate you're a military genius, sir.
Derricote tapped the side of his head with a thick finger.
That's because I'm smart enough to know that the only data that is safe is the data stored up here. I've anticipated a move against Borlaeus ever since I found the biotic station in working order. And I've planned accordingly.
The intelligence officer heard the confidence in the man's voice and isolated another component in the tone he used.
Eagerness. You're looking forward to this.
I may have my business on the side here, Agent Lore, but I am a loyal son of the Empire.
The large man shrugged.
Besides, I was at Darafor. I learned to enjoy killing rebels there, and have formed my plans here to make Borlaeus just as deadly to the Alliance.
A convoy died at Darafor, General. A laudable event, but it was not a military force.
Kirtan shook his head.
You'll get their best here. Including Rogue Squadron, I do not doubt.
Their best or their worst, it doesn't matter.
General Derricote smiled easily.
They're expecting to snuff a candle here at Borlaeus. But when they come, they'll get burned by a Nova.
Corin's X-Wing came out of hyperspace in the shadow of the Emancipator. The Imperial Star Destroyer's dagger-like profile stabbed deeply into the image of the world he knew only as Black Moon. Beyond the Emancipator, he saw the Iridane and two modified bulk cruisers. The Mon Vali was home to Salm's Defender Wing, while the Korilag was the launching platform for the 8 assault shuttles that would ferry down the rebel ground troops. The Emancipator remained in position to safeguard the fleet's exit vector from the system. While none of the briefings had supplied Corin the name of the system and world, he did know jumping out would be difficult. General Crefay, in giving them a final briefing, had emphasized the need for security concerning the operation, and had promised that while they did not know the name of the world at which they were going to fight, future generations would, and would laud them for having been there. At the time, Corin had thought Crefay had enough confidence to take the world by himself, but that failed to banish the bad feelings he had about the mission. The briefings had all been longer on morale building than they had on facts. While the simulator runs had let everyone get comfortable with their roles in the assault, Something just felt wrong as far as Corrin was concerned. Keep your eyes open and fly your best. That's all you can do right now.
Whistler brought up Corrin's tactical screen.
Rogue Leader, I have no enemy ships on scan, but the base does have a shield up.
Thanks, Nine. Rogues, form up to escort Defender Wing.
Wedge's voice came cleanly through the speakers in Corrin's helmet.
Fly high side on the Emancipator.
Corrin pulled back on his stick and kicked the X-Wing over in a lazy roll that brought him up above the Star Destroyer. All at once, the capital ship started pulsing out salvo after salvo of turbo laser and ion cannon shots. Red bolts would merge into sheets of energy, burning down through the atmosphere to slam into the Imperial base's shielding. The bloody red color would soak down into the shield, obscuring the installation beneath it. As it faded to pink, a cerulean blanket of ion cannon energy would drop over it. The blue fire fragmented and sizzled over the energy dome with hundreds of lightning-like tendrils. Some of them bled off the dome, and buildings outside its sanctuary exploded and melted. The surrounding jungle began to burn, ringing the base with fire.
Makes for a perfect target, though the fire will make flying tough down there. Whistler, give me a general track on air currents groundside. Also monitor the size of the shield. When it shrinks, it's coming down.
Wave after wave of energy poured down through the rising column of smoke. The energy slammed into the shields with a thunder crack that sent vibrations deep enough to shake the command bunker where Kirtan stood. The relentless pounding had made him flinch at first and fear for his life. But now the sounds merged into one unending rumble. The few working monitors in the command center showed satellite views of the attacking fleet and the fiery circle on the planet's surface. Derrico turned toward Kirtan.
Hard to believe anyone could survive down there, isn't it?
The intelligence officer nodded.
It does tax credulity, General.
And the rebels are so ready to be credulous.
The military man looked over at one of the technicians at the shield controls.
Status, Mr. Harm?
Still.